This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place to write and the perfect place to read a great book. Well, I am so thrilled. I have in the studio with me today Rick Incorvia, who's going to be here and throughout the next interview, and we're going to be talking about his wonderful books, and it's always so exciting when I have somebody in the studio. But right now I have, and I'll just say hi to Rick.
Hi, Patsy.
Okay, you're going to enjoy this next interview because I'm talking to somebody so important to the whole world of writers, Grant Faulkner. Okay, is Grant on?
Oh, hey, Patsy.
Yeah. Well,
thank you for that great introduction.
Well, you are so important and so beloved by so many people because you are the executive director of NaNoWriMo, which, of course, tell everybody what it is. So,
gosh, NaNoWriMo is many things. It's the largest writing event in the world. This year we'll have about 450,000 people sign up to write
wow.
with us, and that includes 100,000 kids and teens with our Young Writers Program. And in its simplest form, it's a challenge to write 50,000 words of a novel during the month of November. So 30 days, 50,000 words, about 1,700 words a day. And the premise is really that so many people don't prioritize creativity in their lives. So many people say, I want to write a novel someday. And someday tends never to happen, and so we want to make someday happen today.
Well, NaNoWriMo is so important for writers because, as I told you, my goddaughter did her first one 2 years ago.
Right.
And I was so proud of her when she won at the end, and she came out with a novel a little over 50,000 words, and it was so good. Of course, she had to start working on the one thing every writer has to learn is that the first draft is not ever perfect, but it's inspiring. And so she then has been editing that one for a year. Then she did the second one and again won, and she's not on her first one. She is working on it, and she already has some interest, from
Great.
Publishers.
I love those stories.
Isn't it exciting? And I love her so much. And her name is Kanisha, and she is one of those people who goes out and rescues people after hurricanes. And so I want to say a special shout out to her because I know she is always there and ready to help after a hurricane. So a special hug to Kanisha. And Grant, I know that wherever she is, she's listening because I know she was so excited to hear that you were going to be on the program today.
Yeah, well, thanks for telling that story. And I think, like you mentioned, that the rough draft is that it needs work afterwards, and that's part of our premise as well, is that people put so many kind of obstacles or tend to put obstacles between themselves and an act of creativity. And one of those obstacles is expecting your rough draft to be perfect or to look like the finished novel of your favorite novelist, and that's just not the case. Every novelist in the world, including the most seasoned professional novelist, writes a crappy rough draft. So our premise is like, banish your inner editor. Don't worry about how crappy the rough draft is. The important thing is to write it, get the words on the page. You can't edit a blank page, believe it or not, so those words are going to be handy when you get into the editing stage.
Well, Rick Incorvia is sitting here with me in the studio, and he smiled when he heard that, because that's exactly what he discovered when he decided, also sort of late in life, not too late, I mean, he's still very young, but he changed directions, and also, right, Rick, it was
correct.
Fun.
Hi, Grant.
Hey, Rick.
The first time when you first finished your first book, it was not perfect.
No, and it's amazing that you think you're going to write the book and you're done, but there's so many stages after that.
But those stages are so much fun.
Yes.
And the whole point, as Grant tells everyone, You can do it. And
you can do it. And believe it or not.
And the wonderful thing is you have written a book that's called Pep Talks for Writers. But
yeah.
It is such a great book. It is a book that is for anybody, whether you are interested in painting or glass blowing or ceramics or knitting or whatever. I think your book, Pep Talks, is so reaffirming, telling people that they can be creative.
Yeah, thanks for saying that, Patsy, because I view it as going beyond just writers as well. I mean, the emphasis is on writers because I'm a writer, and so my community is, you know, full of writers, of course. But I really do think that the premise of the book is developing a creative mindset and really going beyond the month of November and developing that creative mindset so that you can write and be creative no matter what you're doing year-round. And that's why there are 52 essays, one essay for each week of the year, if you want to read it like that. I try to come at creativity from just a whole bunch of different angles and help people get over their obstacles.
Well, I love what you write about, that children are creative, and somewhere along the line, people tend to knock it out of them. And when I look back and I think of my school years, I had the most horrendous, horrible third grade teacher in the world. And she was just like so horrible that I hated education for a while because of her. And I also didn't think that I was, you know, smart enough to do anything. And so it's so important to encourage children just to go with it.
Yeah, you know, and I think what you're mentioning is a creativity wound. And so many of us, most people really at some point in their life, have that naysayer, that critic who wounds them. And it's really difficult to get over that wound and to be creative again. And then I also think, you know, Picasso has this great quote that I lead the book with, that every child is born an artist. The challenge is how to remain an artist once you're grown up. And I think what happens to us when we're grown up, beyond any creativity wounds we might have, is that there's just a swarm of shoulds in our lives. And those shoulds are our to-do lists. You know, our to-do lists get very crowded with all these practical concerns. They're very important, but many of them, like, shove creativity down to the bottom of the list or off the list entirely. And so I oftentimes, when I'm talking to people about NaNoWriMo and I'm encouraging them to do it, I'll hear, I'm sorry, I'm not a creative type. And we are, the definition of being human is to be creative. So we're all creative types. We're all storytellers. Stories shape our meaning of the world. And so that's why everybody's story matters. It's important to write that story.
Well, I love the titles of your chapters. They just right away, when one looks at your book, you can pick the one that sort of grabs you first. Like the one that I liked was Accept the Mess.
Well, you do have to accept some mess, just like we were talking about the rough draft not being perfect. I think you have to accept the mess on the page, at least in the rough draft. You also sometimes have to accept the mess in your life, you know. In order to make creativity a priority, and especially in November, to put it number one on your list, I think it's worth letting the dishes go for perhaps a day, or maybe not to vacuum the floor as often as you might the carpet. You know, but because creativity is really important, and it's good to make it a focal point of your life. And that's one lesson of NaNoWriMo, is just do it for a month. You know, just create that creative habit, create that creative mindset and that momentum. You'll have plenty of time to clean your house in your life. I guarantee you no one has been on their deathbed crying out, I wish I would have washed the dishes more often. You know, but many people do on their deathbed say, I wish I would have written that novel.
Right.
Exactly. And that's why one of the things that I love to encourage people to do is write a memoir. That it sometimes people think, oh, you know, a memoir is an autobiography. I have to start at the beginning. I have to tell everything, and I don't want to tell everything. And I explain, it doesn't have to be, you know, it can be 2 days in your life, something that changed you, or, you know, something that you want to impart. And just have fun with it and go with it and get it down on paper. And once you start, it's amazing. And that's why I named this program Joy on Paper, because even in the roughest form, there is such a joy to see your words on paper.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that's so great the way that you're introducing the idea of writing a memoir to people who might be not so reluctant to do so, is breaking down their preconceptions of what they have to write. I think there's so many different ways to write a memoir, and I've talked to a lot of people who've written their memoirs during National Novel Writing Month. And the thing is like it's a gift to yourself just to your writing like teases out so many memories and so many layers to those memories, and so it's a wonderful experience just to re-remember things and kind of relive them. But also, if you want to share that with others, I mean, my dad died a year ago, and I loved him. He's a fantastic storyteller. I know him very well, but I would have cherished a memoir from him, whether it was published or not. I would have just cherished the word that he gave to his life. So I think you're right, Patsy. People, it's great when they can just jump in and put words to their experiences.
Well, that's what I tell people. You might not become a bestseller. It might be something that you just publish on Amazon on your own. But to think, I would so love if I had, some funny relatives in my past.
Yeah.
I wish they had written memoirs and I could go back and just click on Amazon and read their memoirs, because it would be so much fun to know this. Some of my relatives who, came from Europe and they had stories to tell and nothing saved. And that's why if you are alive today, just do it. Just get your memoir down and try to collect. One of the lovely things is to collect stories from your family and turn it into a book.
Yeah, and you when you said the title of your story, your show, Joy on Paper, that's essentially our mantra too, is that, when you mentioned publishing, some people, I think, the idea of publishing can stifle them, or they don't think they're a writer until they're published. But you're a writer because you write. Everybody's a writer or can be a writer, and you can find joy on paper, and that's what we try to open up the doors to that and allow people to give themselves permission, and allow people to also, that their story is important. Everybody has a story, and everybody's story matters. That's our mantra, and so the joy on paper comes from articulating and putting those words into the world.
Now, another one of your chapters, and each chapter, as you said, there are 52 of them, and they are, well, I must say they are perfectly written, because you are a master of the 100-word story, which you have to tell us about too. So each chapter is a little mini masterpiece, as I call them. But I liked another one: channel your superheroic observational powers.
Yeah, well, that's one of the biggest benefits about being a writer, I think, is for me personally, is that it helps attune. I'm more attuned to the world as a result. I mean, writers have to notice things, and it's wonderful walking through life like as a witness, observing people, eavesdropping on the conversations, thinking about different ways to experience the world. So we tend to be visually dominant. Most people lean on their visual senses to experience the world, but sometimes I go on a sound walk where I'm just focusing on the sounds in the world.
Agreed.
And so, it's a matter of using your superheroic observational powers is paying attention to all of your senses and to think about how you can interpret the world through those senses. And I think that makes you a better writer in the end.
Well, Rick right away said I agree, because it is important to start noticing what's going on around you.
I've done blind walks or just stay in the dark as long as I can to hear the things that other people have forgotten to hear.
And I have stayed in Panera's longer than I expected, because somebody at the next table, they're really having interesting conversation, and I want to sort of capture that in my mind. So, and it is important. One of the things that I advise people who want to write, I say, sit in Panera's and look around, and then see if an hour later when you go home, can you write down your observations? Did you notice this? Did you notice the way there's a very elegant lady who's holding her cup not by the handle. She's ordered, she's asked for a regular glass cup, which is she didn't want that paper cup. So there's something, and she looks elegant, and you think, wow, why is she, you know, not many people actually order that glass cup in Panera's. And you right away, it's sort of, well, that's interesting. And then the way she holds it, she doesn't hold it with the handle, she holds it on the side. And you think, well, where is she from? Where did she learn to do that? Did she live in China for a long time and she wasn't used to hand? You know, all of these little things, you if you start observing, you're amazed at yourself.
Patsy, I have to check in here. The name of my next book is You Don't Say, and it's exactly about the things you overhear when you're out to eat.
Oh, does that sound...
I love that exercise, Patsy, because it's great because it forces you to observe things in the moment and then hold them in your memory and write them later. One of the chapters in my book is going on a story field trip, and I think this is another great benefit about being the writer is it can get you, you know, you don't always have to be behind the desk. And so anytime I'm writing a story, I try to go someplace that either the setting itself or resembles the setting. And so in this chapter in the book, I'm like, if you are writing about a doctor, go into a hospital, not as a patient, but as an observer, you know, and just as you're saying, you'll observe all those interesting little nuances, like how the lady held her cup, and you'll bring those nuances to the story, and you'll find those interesting character traits that really make a story rich.
Well, I have one of my listeners who came to me and said, well, I want to write, and she hasn't written her book yet, but what I said, find something that intrigues you, and then just follow it. And yeah. So over the past year and a half, she's been reporting to me. She picked a historical character. I won't mention who yet because she wants to have it as a surprise. But it has now taken her. She's gone to like three different states to see where this person lived. She's gone to their houses. She's now someone who was so shy. She never thought even... in her life of writing a book, she's now interviewing relatives of a long-dead famous person.
I love that. And I always recommend that people set their novels in Paris so that then they have to go travel there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's my joke. But no, her sounds amazing. That is, you're right, that's amazing that she's going even beyond visiting and doing interviews and things.
So even if she never writes a word, she's gotten a new look on life.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I love that.
Isn't it fantastic? But I know.
Yeah, our writing can take us to amazing places. I mean, I just view that like this is why I'm kind of an evangelist for creativity. Is that it is a type of religion. It deepens the life experience in so many ways.
And now, of course, we're 20 days out. What do you recommend to people to get ready for NaNoWriMo?
Well, there are a lot of different ways to get ready, and we're putting on webcasts, and we have weekly podcasts with you know, how to, you know, prepare to write a novel from different people's points of view. We're featuring a number of different, you know, authors. We have tweet chats. We have our forums on the NaNoWriMo site. And by the way, it's free to sign up. We're a nonprofit. Our forums have literally a million threads during or a million posts during the month of November. So they're very active. And NaNoWriMo is really a community organization. So it's both a community online. And then we have 1,000 volunteers around the world who organize writing gatherings in their local communities, often in Panera's, by the way. And so I think it's really valuable to connect with other writers and to, like, find that NaNoWriMo community, and they can help you prepare. But I think this is, like, a great time. You know, sometimes people hesitate and they don't want to sign up because November is almost here and they might not even have a novel idea. You can get an idea pretty quickly, and it doesn't take that long to kind of start daydreaming about it and, you know, take a few notes and even make a loose outline. You don't have to do any of that. Some people just start writing on November 1st. But this is what I want to encourage people is don't shut the door on it this year. You can still have a great experience. You know, I think this is a great time to start thinking about a novel, and 2 weeks is plenty of time. In fact, I just started this morning. I decided on my novel this morning, and I started taking a few notes.
Well, I mentioned Panera's for a reason because I know that you do have these wonderful, wonderful volunteers who set up, these get-togethers. But if there isn't anyone in your community, you can do your own little NaNoWriMo event in your own local Panera's or coffee shop and gather people together and just encourage each other.
It's absolutely, and that's a lot of it. A writing community is, it's like I always say, it's one part, you know, encouragement, one part coaching, one part like whip cracking, you know. Being part of a community helps keep you accountable. So writing 50,000 words, people in your community will be, how's it going? You know, if you had a bad day, they'll probably offer some tips and encouragement to keep going, to reach that finish line.
And to share it, to tell people, I'm a writer. I'm writing this month. And
yeah.
And people, well, and your family and friends will maybe help you out and take over doing the cleaning and some of the other things, just so that they know that you have every day that you can sit down and write over 1,700 words.
Exactly. That's a good ulterior motive to write a novel in November, is that other people might just do your chores for you.
Yeah. No, it's true.
I'm gonna try that one.
You try that one. It's a good one.
Yeah. You can get by with it for exactly 1 month.
Yeah, why not? Take the chance. Of course, it's really a trouble if the whole family decides to start. Everybody's going to be eating takeout for that.
No, I know families who've written together. One family in my hometown did it, a family of five. I thought it was those are the stories that I find so wonderful. I mean, can you imagine having a family of five writing a novel together? Not one novel, but each are writing their own novels throughout the month.
Oh, that's exciting. What a thing to share. And the important thing, it's so international now. You have people from all over the world participating.
Yes, we do. We've had people write on all seven continents, including the Antarctic. Last year we had people from more than 200 countries write. And our municipal liaisons, those volunteers who organize local events, they are around the world as well. So most of them in the United States, but they're around the world.
I was reading some notes from some people in India who have participated now for a couple of years, and they just love it. They are so thrilled, and they're writing in English.
You can write in any language,
yeah,
though.
But
yeah,
they're writing in English, and partly they said that the reason they decided to write in English is that it really forced them to learn, you know, and improve their English, and they just love it.
Wow, well, that's great. I haven't heard that as like a benefit to writing a novel, but I'll add it to my list.
Oh, it is, because they've done it now like for 3 or 4 years, and they were saying that, you know, their first, of course, although they speak, you know, there are 100 million English readers in India.
Yeah, it is one of our fastest growing regions overseas, definitely.
Well, you know, Robin Cook is a bestseller in India, which is one of the reasons he has sold so many books, is because the Indians, 100 million of them who read in English, love books about medicine. And of course, all of his books are centered around some type of medical mystery. And
yeah.
So that's why he's such a... I always say to somebody, if you can find out what Indians really enjoy reading, and then tap into that 100 million people, you'll have a bestseller.
Yeah. Now, Patsy, are you going to sign up for NaNoWriMo this year?
Oh, I am, absolutely. And I've been thinking, I was not thinking about doing it, and then I thought, well, if my Kanisha can do it, I can do it.
Good.
Because it's just so much fun, and not that I don't write all the like I'm always writing, but this is going to be a special book, something different that I've never written before.
Well, that's good, because I always say that NaNoWriMo, you know, it started as a creative experiment, and I encourage people to experiment with their creative process every year they do it. I try to do something different every year, to take a different approach on writing a novel. So that's great.
And it can be anything. You can do sci-fi. You can do romance. You can do young adult. Just have fun with it.
Exactly, and just have fun with it as part of the premise. Like, don't put too much anguish. I mean, writing is full of anguish, just kind of by definition. So why not make it a little fun?
Well, and people can take the anguish out by simply getting your book and reading your pep talks, and as I said, they are beautifully written. And just mention quickly about your 100-word stories.
Oh, yeah. So my side venture, my little venture, it's 100wordstory.org. It's a website, a literary journal online, and every story has to be exactly 100 words. So it's what's kind of called microfiction. There's flash fiction, which is traditionally defined as stories that are under 1,000 words. So this is kind of a subgenre of flash fiction. It's really taken off. It's really been amazing, and it's a very addictive form. I found it a really interesting technique, because it's as much about editing as it is about writing. You know, you're really kind of tearing down your story and cutting anything that's like wasteful, and so it makes you pay attention to each word and each sentence. And you can tell a whole story in 100 words. You can have a beginning, middle, and end. It takes a lot of practice, but you can get there.
And it has and to be literally 100 words?
Pardon me?
It has to be literally 100 words, not
literally
100
words.
101.
Yeah, well, you got to find one word to trim then.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. 101. So it's kind of like a poetic form, like a villanelle or a sonnet. Mm-hmm. You're writing within rules. And I came out with a book called Fissures, which is a collection of 100 100-word stories. And I was so addicted to writing them, I could barely write anything else the year I was writing them.
Okay, and that website is?
100wordstory.org.
Okay, and then for anyone interested in doing NaNoWriMo, where should they go?
NaNoWriMo.org.
Okay.
So sign up, it's free. You got nothing to lose.
Nothing to lose and everything to gain. And
everything to gain.
You know, as I said, you're a winner even if you don't get to the 50,000.
Absolutely.
Simply starting and then going back, maybe in December you go back and you say, oh, I didn't make it. And then you start thinking, well, there's another year coming up. There's another November. And
well, there's also, you know, sometimes people will say to me, I only wrote 10,000 words. And I'm like, no, you didn't only write 10,000 words. I mean, 10,000 words a month is fantastic. If you can write 10,000 words every month of the year, you're going to end up with 120,000 words, which is a huge novel, maybe two novels.
Yeah.
So
but
never be ashamed of that.
That's right. And a huge novel that they'll tell you to cut it down to 100,000 anyway. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Grant, I want to thank you so much. Grant Faulkner, you know, not only are you a great executive director for NaNoWriMo, I think your book, Pep Talk for Writers, is actually a pep talk for everybody, because there's everybody can be creative. It doesn't matter. You might want to, you know, for somebody who just doesn't think, you know, I can do anything. One of the most miraculous things I've seen is somebody who thought they absolutely were not creative. For years that I'm not creative, I can't create, I'm nothing, I just can't do it, I don't have that kind of a mind. And then she started crocheting, and she crocheted the most beautiful things you ever saw in your life. And she's an artist. And that is the joy of learning, of being creative, and getting
Absolutely.
That creativity back that kids have and that we all want to cherish and nurture.
That is such a great story. And you can crochet those words on the page as well.
Okay.
So, thank you so much, Patsy.
Okay. Thank you so much,
Grant. My
pleasure,
Grant.
Thanks,
okay.
Rick.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, he's nice.
Interesting
oh,
man.
Is he? Oh, he's fascinating. Brilliant. Oh, he was one of the Aspen writers and got to spend a whole month in Aspen just writing. You have to look into that. Meanwhile, we are going to take a commercial break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about your books.
Great.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
WTAN Radio is proud to announce that local author and speaker Glenn Erickson will soon be a guest on Pat Z's Joy on Paper program. He will tell you how he got his start and how you too can become an accomplished writer, author, and speaker. Glenn Erickson has published self-help books as well as speculative fiction stories and novels. All of his books are available on smashwords.com. and BarnesandNoble.com.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guest in the studio, Rick Incorvia.
Hi, Patsy.
Okay, it's so nice to have you here today. Wasn't Grant interesting?
Yes, very interesting. I want to get in on that NaNoWriMo.
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 It's National Novel Writing Month every November. And when I first heard about it, I called it NaNoWriMo because I didn't know. But it's NaNoWriMo, and it is a wonderful event. It's so amazing what it's did for my goddaughter, and I know that she is such an enthusiastic participant, and I, as a challenge to myself, I'm going to do it this year. But the wonderful thing about, well, I want everyone to really go to my Facebook page, which is Radio Joy on Paper, and I have a link there to Grant's book, which is called Pep Talks for Writer. Now, and 52, he has 52 chapters, beautifully written chapters, because he is a great writer. But the thing about them is he is just so encouraging, and he has this real understanding of where you can find your sort of creative muse. And a wonderful book, and really for anybody, whether you're going to write or not, just to have this kind of joy of living, of being a participant in life. It's wonderful stories, and the book is great, and you can see it on my Facebook page, which, by the way, while you're there, like my Facebook, please. It's Radio Joy on Paper, and I'm going to have Rick's book there too, because we're going to be talking about it, because I love time travel books. I've always loved time travel books, and so the new book is, and he's got five different books, so we're going to mention some of the other ones, but the new one is The Traveler's Bestseller, and we're going to find out from Rick about that. How about this book? Where'd you get the idea for it?
Gosh, The Traveler's Bestseller. You know, just teachers these days struggle so much to speak with students. You know, we're cell phone zombies, and you know, I wrote just a brief bit about it that sums it up quite well, if you oblige me for just a moment. Mr. Peregrine is an average Joe high school history teacher who hears the words we all fear hearing. You have terminal cancer. Now, make no mistake, this is not a sad story or a boring history lesson. This man changes the lives of his students, the faculty, and ultimately the future. In his search for understanding and for answers, he meets Anne Trans, a brilliant scientist that seems just a bit too interested in fulfilling his dying wishes. Her partner, Andrew, develops virtual reality simulations that are so real they're considered unconscious reality. He can make you believe that you're eating breakfast with George and Martha Washington or playing a harpsichord alongside Wolfgang Mozart. To a history teacher, this may as well be crack or heroin. In these travels, 6 hours can seem like 2 weeks or 2 months or 2 years. What a way to buy time when yours is so limited. His passion for life and for teaching is awakened. However, this is also not what this book is about. This book is about the book that he writes at the end of his travels. The ending actually came to me in a dream, and people are contacting me from all over the world to tell me this story changed them. Others say at the end of the story they flip to the back cover, hoping to read that this is a true story. Writing this story changed me. Maybe it will be a dream come true.
Wow. As I said, when I was, it's sort of serendipity that you came in today, because I had a cancellation of somebody who's actually in the hurricane zone and had to cancel because she wasn't sure if she would be available today. So it just turned out to be so perfect because I got your book and I'm reading it, and I love books that one take research, and obviously you've done some research here, and just being able to pick the people that you wanted to see.
And I went through a lot of people. I read a lot of books and tried to find the ones that I thought were the most interesting, but learning about everything from the Wright brothers to, George Washington. I read so much about George Washington. And what I wanted to do was read enough about all these people that I felt like I really knew them. So I had to read different people's books. I mean, I bet I read that much Washington. So just so much about them so that I felt like I knew what I was talking about. Also, you know, when you write a book, if you make a mistake, boy, you hear about it. So you got to make sure your facts are right.
Oh, yes. If you're going to name George Washington's horse,
you better know the right one.
You better know the right one. And tell us his name, with the one in the book.
George Washington's horse?
Yeah.
It's slipping my mind now because you got me nervous.
I make him nervous. But it's Nelson. And
yes,
I was thinking.
Nelson.
And I knew that because one of the things that I've always been sort of obsessed with Lord Nelson, and I always found it interesting that, you know, although separated long in time, that George Washington's horse would be named Nelson. And one of the things that I love about this, your stories, is that you really take an sort of everyday moment and then expand on it. And I love that.
Thank you.
You were talking and writing about Mount Vernon. I've been there many times, and I just enjoyed. And I was thinking how nice it was that you were going down a trail with George Washington on a horse. And
yes.
And one of the things that people don't know, so many people don't know, that George Washington was 6'3". And a big guy for those
230
days.
230 pounds. Yeah, that was huge. That was a giant back then.
Exactly. And it puts him in a different perspective when you think of that.
Yes.
And I've always known, you know, about him and about, I've done a lot of research in that area. And so I've always liked to tell people that, you know, he's a big guy in so many ways. And then a few weeks ago, I met Lee Child. And although I know what 6'3", my father was 6', and that was tall, you know, for me. And 6'3", I could sort of imagine. I think I've been behind a few football players. And then I met Lee Child, who's 6'5", and I took a picture with him. And it reminds me of the story now of we were talking about. That, you know, I like people who have been doing different things in their life, and then suddenly things change and they start writing. And Lee Child is an example. I don't know if you know that Lee Child was 39 years old when he was fired. He was an executive producer at at one of the largest television stations in England, and he thought his whole life was going to be executive producing television shows, and then he was fired. At the age of 39, and he had no money saved. He had nothing, and he was sort of desperate. And because he was in a really bad, bad, bad mood, and he felt like killing everybody, he wasn't really up for doing interviews. It was not a good time to go and do an interview because he was so angry. And he didn't trust anybody. He had thought about going and doing an interview with other, you know, television stations in England, but since he already looked so angry, he decided to write a book, and he told his wife, I'm going to write a book.
Was it an angry book?
And that's where he came up with Jack Reacher.
Oh.
Yeah. Jack Reacher goes into a town, and what does Jack Reacher do? He finds the bad guys, and he bashes their head against the car.
Yes.
Well, that's what Jack Reacher did, and that's what Lee Child wanted to do, and in his first book, he essentially bashed the head of all of the board
right,
of directors.
What you're feeling.
Exactly. And he went with what he was feeling. Mm-hmm. And that's why today Jack Reacher still goes to town. But he's gotten over his... the funny thing he mentioned is that he used the name of his of the board of directors. He used their names in his book.
Oh, how funny.
Because he said, what are they going to do? Are they going to sue me and say, you know, on page 314.
You killed me.
I'm here. This is me, a fat, ugly, stupid idiot. So he said, they can't do that.
Brilliant.
So he said, you know, I could use their names. Yeah. And they're not going to sue me. And right. He was right.
How funny.
So isn't that nice?
Yeah.
And now, of course, you came, we mentioned casually, just, it was a change of life for you, too.
Yes, it was.
A fun change of life. You went from being a developer to a writer.
And yes.
Was that a, like, whew.
Well, that was a necessary challenge. When as I don't know if you're allowed to say that word out, when it hit the fan.
Yes.
You know, I had to do something to keep myself from going crazy, and I found an old license that was actually a fake ID so that I could buy beer when I was 16. And I wondered what this fake person, Rick Timber, would be like 20 years later, 30 years later. And I wrote a sentence about him and then a paragraph and then a chapter. And then it turned into my first book. And I was hooked. Yeah. I was just hooked on writing after that.
Well, that's what happens. That's what I call the joy on paper. Once you start, you can't stop because you think, whoa, I did that.
Because you're out at a restaurant and you see somebody with an eye patch or a limp and they're one of your characters before you know it. You just got them in your next book.
And of course, as you discovered, you write your first book. It's not perfect.
Correct.
But you had a little bit of editing to do.
Well, I have a story about that. I actually overheard a relative who didn't think I was listening making fun of my book, saying, oh, he thought it was going to be a big hit and it was a flop. And I remember hearing that, and for a moment, I let myself get discouraged. And then I shook it off and wrote another and another, and they're starting to do real well. I'm so excited about this whole writing.
Well, it's always so wonderful when I see people who just jump into it, and sort of you might just get your toe into it, and then once you start, and you find this excitement of knowing that there are lots of ideas in your head that you don't even realize.
Right. And you mix them together, reality, with things to make it more interesting, and it just turns out to be so interesting. I just love it.
Well, now, let's talk about the newest book, and that just came out when? That was recent.
Oh, 6 months ago.
6 months ago. Okay, so now you're in the process of promoting it, and tell us... just to intrigue people, a few of the characters in the book.
Well, of course, there's Mr. Peregrine, and he is the traveler. And then there is I'd say, less than scrupulous trio, Anne and her two techs that take you on these simulations. But they have an ulterior motive in mind that I'm not going to this moment. But there's some very interesting characters. And right now I'm having it put onto Audible. And I'm just loving this guy. There are 22 characters in this book, and the guy reading it right now, Adam Watson, is just doing such a great job at capturing their voices. There's Vladimir, and he's such a character, and he does such a good job with him. And there's George Washington. There is Cleopatra, and it just takes you all over the place, not to mention how interesting a regular student can be. The shy girl who has her books held to her chest all the time, never makes eye contact. There's a part in the book where the kid next to her raises his hand to answer a question and she flinches. And you just know that there's something going on at home. And I tell you, it's full of interesting characters. I'm getting so many comments on the book. I hope you'll give it a read.
Well, I thought when I was reading the Mr. Peregrine character, I thought you were a teacher. I thought perhaps that was your background, that you were an actual school teacher because you captured the students so beautifully.
I was the student.
Yeah, you were. He was the student, but I thought, wow.
Thank you.
I first read it, that's because I didn't know anything about you, and I'm saying, okay, he's a former teacher, and this is his observation of all his students. And I was, because I've had some teachers who have written about their students, and mm-hmm. So you know, there's a certain element you get where you feel that's a real student.
Thank you.
I was impressed with that. And when I discovered that, well, he was a developer, you know, you think, well, is that a developer so observant? And yes, he is. And that's, all of you can be observant too, right?
Yep, and start the story anywhere, I tell people. There doesn't have to be a specific spot. Just start writing. The train was going 60 miles an hour, and just go with it.
That's it.
Yes.
Now, why Mozart? Why, when you were... Oh. Are you musical? You have a musical background, or you just...
No, I do not. I had a friend at age 16. I went to a log cabin with a couple of friends, and when I got there, the older brother was listening to Mozart, and I thought, how weird. That is so weird. And he said, you don't know about Mozart? And it just the way he said it, you could tell he was lit up listening to Mozart. And I went home and learned all about Mozart and just found her to be such an interesting character.
And you certainly make it interesting in the book. Now, when you've, now that, you know, for so many of the people out there, and I hope that they, when I start the program, I will say a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And you certainly got into it, and you've just, now this has been like about 10 years since you started?
Correct.
About 10 years. And you just have gone with it and find this joy of writing. And anyone who is out there who thinks that they can't do it, they should know that they can. Now, of course, for you, the promotion side, there's, you know, many hats that you have to wear when you're an author.
Yes.
And are you finding this a challenge, the business
it's
side?
It's a learning process, but I'm having fun with it. I never imagined all the people involved, but I think the scariest thing is some people feel like they don't structure sentences just right, or they don't spell wonderfully, but you have editors for that and publishers, and I never thought I'd be saying those words, but it's so exciting just to be able to say that.
And the thing is, when you are done and you're out there now, are you like starting to go to book conventions or
yes.
events?
Yes.
Have you been to any? There's some coming up here in our area.
Yes, I have three book clubs that have invited me. One just to speak in front of their group, and one of them's a nice dinner, and they're just starting to call and book more and more, and I'm thrilled and a little shocked.
Well, that's one of the things that you have to do as a writer. You have to learn. Now, of course, having a business background, you're not shy in talking to
Correct.
People. Although you do tend to get shy sometimes talking about yourself in that case.
Yes.
That's the difference. That
yes.
You have to talk about yourself and really, really promote yourself. But we have quite a few events in this area, and there are some wonderful conventions that you can go to. And one of the things that I'm going to, because of Grant being on the program today, he was an Aspen author in residence. And there are groups, there are different organizations around the country, actually around the world, where if you are an author, you know, you're not world famous yet, that you can become an author in residence and one of these programs. And there are quite a few, and I'm going to be putting them up on my Facebook, because all you have to do is apply, and you never know. Grant was selected. He got a month in Aspen. Woo! Can
yeah.
you imagine a month in Aspen in
it.
A beautiful, beautiful chalet, and there he's free to write for an entire month, and everything is paid for. And there are quite a few of these, and I'm discovering more and more. And the funny thing is, they have not been really publicized a lot, but there are some that actually, there's one that's coming up for women, and it's in Italy. You got to Italy, my goodness. So... One of the things, a reason to check out on my Facebook page is every week or so I'm going to put up one of these author in residence programs. Apply. You never know. You might be selected. And sometimes they're like for 2 weeks in Big Sur or a month in, you know, Appalachia somewhere. It's different organizations have and different requirements, but nonprofit organizations that encourage writing. And so many authors don't even, did you know they exist?
Didn't know.
You see, you didn't know they existed. An author in residence program is fantastic. And so I will be letting people know more about them, because I had heard about them and then I did some research, and that's why I was so happy when I got Grant on, because he is an example of somebody who, he had the whole month. And he's just written a whole new book right there in Aspen, and it's all and these always take place in someplace nice. They don't take you to some, you know,
in a dark basement.
They don't take you someplace crummy. As a matter of fact, I hope that maybe at some point we can get big enough here in this area that we can have an author in residence right here in Clearwater, because we have, there are a lot of, excuse me, all you rich people out there, if you're interested in doing an author in residence to promote Clearwater area, if you have a condo that's available for 2 weeks, you can become a sponsor of an author in residence. Now, wouldn't that be great?
That'd be wonderful.
It would be wonderful, because this is a wonderful area for authors. We have so many talented authors. As a matter of fact, Big Ed, do we have Carol Perry's book? Do we have a book buzz ready there? Let's play that. And this is one of our local authors.
Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery, Bells, Spells, and Murders, a Witch City mystery by author Carol J. Perry. And here's the buzz. Lee Barrett has landed her dream job at Salem's Witch TV. As a new field reporter, she'll be covering events live as they're unfolding. Next on her holiday checklist is an interview with the beloved chairman of a popular walking tour through Salem's historic districts. But it may be his ghost walking this snowy Noel season after Lee finds him murdered in his stately offices, bloody Santa hat askew. With her police detective boyfriend working the case and a witch's brew of suspects, including some bell-ringing Santas, Lee chases down leads aided by her wise cat, Orion, who I love, and some unsettling psychic visions of her own. When a revealing clue leads to another dead body, not even a monster blizzard can stop Lee from inching closer to the truth, and a scoop that could spell her own demise this killer Christmas. But don't take it from me. From RT Book Reviews, an entertaining story that keeps readers guessing until the very twisted and eerie end. Carol J. Perry has done it again in Bells, Spells, and Murders, just in time for the holidays. This is Rita Moreau, also known as Radio Rita, reporting for Joy on Paper.
Okay, and that's for that, you know, we have, as I said, we have talented authors in the area, and we have some rich people in the area, so I'm hoping that we can do an author in residence here. I want to thank you so much, Rick in Corvia, for coming in today and talking about your book, The Traveler's Bestseller, and you have other books, and I'll have you back again soon.
Good deal. I'd love to come back.
And do you have a website you want people to go to?
Just go to Author Rick in Corvia.
Okay, Author Rick in Corvia. Okay, that's perfect. Anyway, it's been a wonderful day. Remember what I tell everyone? One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book, and Rick's working on an audible book right now. So thank you, everybody, and have a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Patsy.
Bye-bye.